Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Express Sessions. My name is Ellen DiRigardi. I'm the Director of Events for the Express News Group. We publish the East Hampton Press, the Southampton Press, the Sag Harbor Express, Express Magazine, and the website 27east.com. Today's Express Sessions event is titled Taking the Pulse of Hampton's Real Estate Market. Our publisher, Gavin Manu, who normally does this job, is sorry he can't be here today, but as someone who for many years ago worked in the real estate field for over 15 years and whose mom was a broker in East Hampton for over 20 years, I love getting a chance to be in front of all of you and take Gavin's place. So I'm happy to welcome you all. We have a terrific group of panelists to help lead the conversation, and I will introduce them in a moment. As for today's discussion, interest rates, the stock market, and the economy more broadly are the shifting sands under the feet of the Hamptons real estate market. With rate cuts in the forecast and the stock market near all-time highs, today's panel of real estate professionals will assess the state of the market as it stands today and offer insights into where things are heading in 2024. We have Lawrence Ngolo, who's a broker with Sotheby's International Realty. Thank you, Lawrence. There. Patrick Galway, who is Senior Executive Sales Manager with Town & Country Real Estate. Thank you, Patrick. Enzo Morbido. We've got JB DeSantos, who is a broker with Brown Harris Stevens. Thank you, JB. Scott Strau, who is a broker with Compass Real Estate. Thank you, Scott. And Dana Trotter, who is the Managing Partner of the agency Hamptons. Thank you, Dana. And with that, I will turn things over to the moderator for today's event, the Executive Editor of the Express News Group, Joe Shaw.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for being here this afternoon. It's a great intimate space for this, I think. This is sort of new for our Express sessions, but that's cool because these are meant to be conversations. We are going to bring you into the discussion very quickly. So I hope you all take part and make this a lively discussion. We can take this anywhere anybody wants to take it. We'll talk about the market and how it stands today. We have copies of our Pulse section that we published this week. The editor of our resident section, Brendan O'Reilly, is here. We did sort of an overview of where things stand at this time of year, which is traditionally considered sort of a kickoff to the season. Is that still true, by the way? Does February still count as a kickoff to the real estate season? That's changed a bit, right?
Depends on the weather.
It sort of works, you know, in an old-fashioned way, at least. We think about President's Day and the kickoffs. So I want to give our panelists a chance to introduce themselves, and I'll start at the far end with Scott Strau. Scott, talk a little bit about the market and just give us an overview of where you think things stand right now.
Well, thank you, Joe. And thank you, everyone. I see a lot of familiar faces, and you know, it's great because a lot of people probably text me afterwards and go, oh, you know, why didn't you ask this or why didn't you say this? The market, very general. We could look at it from a perspective of short term and micro. I think that the seasons generally, and this is after, I'm afraid to tell you how many years I've been doing this since I've been 18, but.
So it, 5 years.
Yeah, it's about 5 years. In fact, I used to be the young guy, and now I think I'm like the old guy. But I like to tell people that it starts right after the Super Bowl. And I think it's around that time where things start to kick in, weather related and everything else, as far as the bigger picture. You start to see the itch out here. You start to see people coming out. And, you know, if you look at it from a practical perspective, they come out driving down the LIE and they want to come out and buy houses or rent houses. But in the bigger picture, in the macro look, we'll probably talk about this. You mentioned interest rates. I think it's much more than that. I think that the overwhelming credit card debt that people have, and all of the bad news that you start to see in papers, and every night you turn on the TV and you're hearing bad news, I think that hurts the perceptions in real estate. But on the East End, the one thing I thought about walking in here, it's beautiful today. And I came over the bridge, and we have beautiful natural resources out here. It's our anchor. It is the driver. So when we're talking to people about the real estate market, we have world-class beaches. We have this harbor. Last year, there were $2 billion in boats anchored out in the summer. I mean, we have spectacular natural resources. And that's always going to help us and sustain, you know, ups and downs and where the market is, it's always going to anchor us and help us not only in the real estate industry, but in our overall economy.
Lawrence and Golia, what are some initial thoughts you have about where things stand right now?
Well, thank you for inviting me. But I think the market out here is doing very well. We're seeing a cycle like we used to see before COVID, right? It's a little bit more predictable. Wasn't like going off the charts. The buyers are very savvy. They come out every year and they're smarter than ever. They know exactly what they're looking for. And it's also very weather dependent this time of year, right? If the weather's not good, they don't bother coming out. But I mean, we get calls on Friday or Saturday as they're driving out, and, you know, what's this property? What's that property? And we're scrambling to find it. So overall, I think it's going to be a very good market, very strong market. Everything's looking good.
I'm curious, well-informed folks out there, is that good or bad for you?
It's good, but sometimes you have to be on your toes because they sometimes come out with things, or they'll say something and I'll be like, that doesn't sound right, but I rarely doubt them. You know, then I'll go do some research and it turns out they're right, you know, because they all go to these cocktail parties and they mingle with one another and they learn things that we may not know. So I tend not to doubt them before I do my homework.
Real estate intel is really important. Dana Trotter, give us some thoughts to start off here.
I mean, I'm going to echo a lot of what they said because, you know, we're all in the same market, but incredibly optimistic about the market this year. I mean, Q4 for us was extremely busy. A lot of high-end deals. We did three over $10 million deals in December. So, you know, super optimistic about Q1 and Q2. I think certainly as an election year, you know, we have to be a little bit, you know, aware of that. So, you know, we want to make the most of the first two quarters. But we're seeing tons of new listings right now, which is great for our market. If things are priced, you know, well, if it's compelling, it's still selling very quickly. So, you know, really looking forward to a strong year.
Okay. JB DeSantos, tell us what you think's going on out there right now.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me here. And I would like to recognize the passing of our dear friend, Patty Wazinski, who we missed, who left us about 11 days ago, a big loss for our community. She was one of a kind. And so my heart and prayers are with her family back in Wisconsin. You know, it used to be that up to mid-2000s, up to right after Thanksgiving, we would get really busy. Renters would come out, by February would be booked. Then with the advancement in technology, that was kicked back, and now people are not in a hurry. But the market has changed in that. Before, there was a certain urgency in people coming out and securing a place. Now they leave for the last minute, but currently, the last part of quarter four of 2023 was really busy. It was really good, like Dana said. I had one property in the mid-threes. I had 70 showings. So we closed on that property. Therefore, there were 69 other buyers out there looking for a property in the $3.5 million price range. Buyers are more knowledgeable. They do their homework when they come out here. And I have noticed that lately, right before the closing, they ask for something. So we either have to cut the commission or the sellers have to reduce the price. And so I don't know.
That comes from buying cars, I think, ask for the free floor mats at the end.
Yeah, there is the point is there is no urgency in bringing it into a closing. But I'm very active. I was very active prior to the end of the year in rentals. Last year, I did an amazing number of rentals, and I think this year will be pretty much the same or even more because there was no inventory in the $5-7 million price range. And if it's priced right, it sells right away. So I think it will be a wonderful year. 2024 will be an excellent year for rentals and sales. Based on what's going on with me right now, It will be an amazing year.
Very optimistic.
Oh, good. Yes. This is the Hamptons, after all, like Scott said. Everybody wants to be here.
Patrick Galway.
Hey there. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being here.
I agree with everything they're saying, and I think another big impact on our market has been the lack of inventory. The median sales prices since maybe 2007, 2008, have been hovering around $1 million. But when we got up into 2019, 2020, we saw it jump considerably, 1 million 2, 1 million 3, 1 million 5. Like right now, we're up to just under 1 million 8. And so I think unless we find more inventory somewhere, we're going to continue at that pace. We have less sales that are happening now, but I think a lot of that has to do with the lack of inventory. You know, we talk about interest rates and all those things, but that seems to be, to me, to have the biggest impact that's happening in the marketplace right now.
Okay. So, I want to kick off talking about inventory, actually. Patrick, you mentioned this. This seems to be the biggest driving factor right now in a lot of what's happening in the market. So can we talk a little bit, and I assume most everybody in the room right now is a real estate professional, correct? We're in the industry in some manner, way, shape, or form. But can you talk to us about what changed so drastically in the last few years that created this shortage, and what is going to have to happen in order to change that in any way? Dana,
well,
you're looking.
COVID. COVID changed everything.
How did it change it now, though? How is it still having that impact now?
Well, I mean, we always had a surplus of inventory. And so, you know, it was not uncommon for a house to be on the market for 9 months or a year. And when COVID hit, all of that inventory got scooped up. So there was just, we started from zero, basically. And now we're kind of building it up again. And, you know, pricing is really difficult for us right now because, you know, a lot of people still want to put these really lofty numbers on their properties. And, you know, some of them, there are comps that support it, but there's just not the same kind of demand. There are still buyers out there looking. Obviously, the lower end, the under $5 million market is more affected by interest rates. The upper end of the market is less so. But, you know, we really just started from scratch, basically, with inventory. But now we're seeing easily 6-8 new listings daily now. So that's a lot.
Getting back to the interest rates, you know, all those people who secured homes when the interest rates
two or three percent,
you know, why should I sell and go into something that's 6% or 7%? So that's holding back some inventory of people, you know, not wanting to list their homes.
Sure, Jamie.
Homeowners are sitting on 2.25, 2.75 interest rates, and it's free money.
Yeah,
we don't get money that. You can do other things with the whatever you have in the stock market, and you do not need to sell. I think that's what is holding back the inventory. And I think will last for a while because nobody wants to give away. It's
but
free money.
I think people do realize that that was a false sense of reality.
Yeah.
The rates never should have been that low. I think once rates come down to, you know, in the fives again, people will start to trade again. I mean, even five is incredibly historically low.
Mm-hmm.
So I think once we go back to those sort of normal rates, I think people will start to trade again. And look, people are always going to need to either downsize or upsize. You know, they had a third child, so now they don't fit in a four-bedroom house anymore. They need five or six. So, you know, we're always going to see, you know, that kind of trade.
But the interest rate does not affect us as much here. Most of our transactions are cash. Therefore, in the 90s, we were paying 13% interest rates,
right,
when only Japanese banks were lending, Mitsubishi, Mitsui Yoshioka, because American banks could not lend money. So interest rates in the Hamptons, it's not a real effect, at least in my mind.
But it does have an effect.
I think it has an imaginary effect on some buyers, but not overall.
And Dana, it has an effect on the inventory, I'm guessing, because...
Yeah. Right, well, for what Lauren said, yeah.
Scott?
Well, you have a real pressure on the low end, and this affects us all in the community, because we want to keep our kids here. We want to keep our families here. We want to keep our legacies here. And we can talk about affordable housing, but when you talk about inventory and you're hearing it from the brokers, and I think Patrick just said, you know, you got average sales at 1.8 million. I don't know how many local families are going out there and dropping 1.8 million to make sure that their son, their daughter are staying here in not just Sag Harbor, but on the east end of Long Island. We're dealing with, I would say, 5 or 6 local families right now that are trying to keep their Scott. You know, find us anything. Find us something up in North Sea. Find us a house up in Noyak. Find us, well, all right, starting houses are $1.2 million, $1.3 million, and good luck, because you got another $500,000 in, at least, in work that has to get done to bring it up to speed. And that's a difficult metric. And when parents, families are trying to say to their sons and daughters, oh, by the way, we don't know if we can afford this, then they go for a rental option. And the rental options are, a one bedroom in Sag Harbor is $5,000 to $6,000 a month, if you can find it. And then it's snatched up. it's gone. You know, we're working with a couple of properties right now, and we're trying to price them. And just whispering $6,000 a month on a one bedroom, we get calls, we'll take it, sight unseen. So we are, all of us in this room, as people in real estate, I think we are really in a challenged arena right now. We're in a spot right now where I haven't seen it throughout my career this troublesome to keep the next generation here. And I hate to say that because I'm a very optimistic guy, but I don't know. I don't know what the solutions are. I think that, you know, I mentioned outside, Fred Thiel just announced his retirement. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for Fred. He is definitely a guy who, you know, he said he's turning 70, so I said, baby, I'm gonna call him up. You're too young. We need to keep you going. But I mentioned, because he introduced this new,
the community
housing,
it's
tied to the preservation tax, but he introduced something that is, I'm hopeful that we can find solutions. And it may challenge the town or the municipalities to go in a different direction outside of the Community Preservation Fund, where they were going out and buying land and preserving it and saying, drive down, you know, Scuttle Hole Road and look at that beautiful farmland. That's all well and good. And they've done a terrific job. And the East End is spectacular because of it. But what do we do with little Johnny, who wants to stay here? And what do we do with their grandkids and families who want to stay here? And they've invested so much. They've invested generational money. They've invested generational time. And I think that's where we in the real estate community need to go in that direction right now. And I'm not talking about overwhelming projects of affordable housing. I'm not going into that because I know it's sensitive here in the village. But I am talking about finding solutions that may be these additional apartments, but that has to be studied, because you could absolutely wreck communities by overwhelming and putting in two or three apartments in single family homes, and all of a sudden now there's parking and all of the other issues that come with that. My final point is that if you're gonna talk about inventory and you're gonna talk about the natural process of the East End real estate market, you have to look at it from the pressure that's down below right now, because there is no, we're not sustaining it. We're not sustaining the local community. And if you wanna have all these transients and people from outside of the area and coming, metropolitan New York, come in, I'm not against that. I make a living from those people. But I also hear, those of us who work locally, we all do, we hear it. And it's like the big blanket that's over us on the East End that, you know.
Let me put this into stark terms here. If we were having this conversation in 2010, we would be talking about the luxury home market, but we'd also be talking about local people in the market buying houses. Is it fair to say that we just don't have a local market anymore? That there are not houses being sold to local residents anymore?
I mean, we still have a local market, but the local market has changed because our community has changed, right? So there's so many affluent people. Look how many, I mean, I was in real estate after 9/11, and we saw a huge surge of people move out here after 9/11. Okay, a lot of those people at that point couldn't work remote, so the husbands or wives would go back into the city during the week, but they kept their family out here because they didn't feel safe in the city at that point. COVID completely turned that upside down and dialed it up by 9,000, right? So, you know, now all these people can A, work remote, you know, and B, they want the lifestyle of not having to worry about space and square footage and being outside and being on, you know, public transport and all of that stuff. So, you know, our local community has changed, right? So the year-round people are not the locals. So that's changing. You know, and in the same vein of what Scott was talking about, you know, a lot of the inventory we're seeing now are people that have been in this community for a long time, right? And now they're downsizing and they're moving to the Carolinas or Florida or wherever they're moving to, and they're selling their homes for what's, you know, a lot of money for them to retire on.
But isn't that pretty much all of the inventory now? Is when people put their houses up for sale now, it's not to buy another house here, right? It's to cash in and go somewhere else.
I wouldn't say that.
It's not
that
not all
completely.
Of them?
No.
Okay.
No.
Many folks are selling here and buying the North Fork. And then they buy the North Fork, they buy it down in Florida or Tennessee or the Carolinas.
They
still have a place to come here during the summer. Now, going back to affordable housing, in the early 90s, I worked with Tom Rule and the late Tom Kopka in East Hampton. Every time a house came in on the market for $300,000, $400,000, I would call them within 2 hours, would be at that house, I would give them an appraisal based on my experience, and the town would purchase that and sell it to a local family. But when you look at all the five towns on the east end of Long Island, East Hampton was the only one. Currently in East Hampton, we have maybe 150 homes for the locals. So we need other places like Wainscott. We were going to, Mario Batista, an architect in East Hampton, had plans, and the late Francis O'Brien, myself, and Barbara Jordan, to build homes on Stephen Hand's path on what was to be called Green Hollow. You probably remember that. I was at the meeting at the VFW, and I'm against it until 2:30 in the morning, and I left because the neighbors hired attorneys, and it was almost a fist fight. So when you mention affordable housing, nobody wants it. So that's the problem. So I have my children. They don't want to be here. You know, they want to explore the world. But I understand there are families whose children want to be here. But I think we, as brokers, real estate agents, we can do a lot more. Before I came here this morning, I went to the town of East Hampton during the public comment session to voice my opinion about the senior center, because I worked on the expansion of the East Hampton Library. We fundraised, I bought a brick with my family's name. I worked on the construction of the YMCA, which was the rec center. I was one of the first ones to buy a membership. We fundraised, we raised money. The senior center in East Hampton, it's an estimated cost of $32 million. And the mayors are saying, not here. So I went to pitch my idea. Let's fundraise.
So you're saying there's a role for the real estate industry.
That we as real estate agents can play if we get involved and we push for affordable housing. And then on Second Avenue, Blue Jay, the town built a number of homes and we sold them for, what, $275,000 for local families, teachers, firefighters, police officers. They came in. They dropped in a pool. It's beautiful. We did change the format. When the late Kathy Lester built the affordable housing in East Hampton, you bought it for $60,000 or $80,000. Those homes were selling for $1.5 to $2 million. This time around, you buy the structure, not the land. The land belongs to the taxpayers. Therefore, one day, if you decide to sell, you have to sell to a low-income family. Mm-hmm. So that will remain for locals or the low-income families forever and ever.
Lawrence,
thinking outside the box.
Lawrence, you had something?
To the affordable housing, I'm involved in trying to sell a four-unit complex to the Housing Authority. And through that process, I learned about a program that they have that I wasn't aware of. So if you're a landlord and you're renting a place for under market value, say it's $4,000 a month and it's worth $5,000, you can go to the town and they will fund that difference of $1,000 a month for 20 years and give that money to the landlord.
Wow.
Which I didn't know about.
So it's another way to make homes affordable.
But the landlord, the property is then clouded for the next 20 years with this covenant on it,
right,
that it has to be kept at a lower rate,
sure,
basically.
But I think what you're saying is that's not something a lot of people are even aware of.
They're not aware of it. I just learned about it last week. Thought it'd be good to get it out there because I think that's
which
great.
Town is that?
Southampton.
Southampton.
Yeah.
Okay.
Patrick, were you gonna have something to add here?
You know, in the western towns over the last few years, we've seen a lot of people, teachers that work in East Hampton, buying houses in East Quahog, West Hampton, and now those places get more expensive, and they're branching out to East and Santa Mariches. We're even seeing, you know, Riverhead as well. And in the past, you know, Flanders was one area which was the most affordable housing, and just recently, in the last few weeks, we've been having multiple bidding wars in that area. So there's a great want for housing. You know, you look at the market studies we have, all for houses under 500,000 or 500, you know, in that range. It's deceiving because it says, you know, the amount of transfers were 50% of what they were. And it's not because people don't want to buy these houses that they don't exist. And we're going to wind up losing categories. You know, the median prices we talked about $1.8 million, you know, up to $1 million, you know, the inventory is so weak. I don't know what's going to change anything. Recently, we had a builder that picking up a mobile park to build some affordable housing, a local builder. Maybe there's some tax incentives for builders to pick up some of this land and to, you know, build some housing for people. But it's obviously getting a lot harder.
It seems like we have a lot of brain power in the room here. So let me ask this, and I'll open it up to the audience too. So what are some real workable ways of addressing this issue? Because it sounds to me like everybody in this room, and correct me if I'm wrong, everybody in this room makes more money from higher sales, you know, the higher price sales. But I think everybody in this room acknowledges that there's an importance to keeping a real year-round community here for infrastructure and keeping a healthy community alive. So how do we do that? Does anybody have, like, real-world ideas for how to do it? And I mean, I think the towns are searching right now, and I think you talked about that program, which would be about trying to keep rent in the somewhat affordable range if you can. But I wonder if anybody here has any ideas of things that we might be able to try.
Jane, can I come to you when I've got closer right now?
The backside of looking at it would be to look at the access to capital, potentially, if like a CPF is holding hundreds of millions of dollars of cash, perhaps there's like a GI Bill type thing where you can get low rates to buy houses. So if it's $1.8 million, we're not going to do anything about the price of the house, but can we provide loans that are next to 0% interest to people who need that type of capital?
Got it. Okay. And let me ask this, since we're talking about interest rates. So the Fed is talking about reducing the rate in the next year by about 75 basis points, which is what I think about 0.75%, right? Is that going to make a big difference as far as inventory, at least? Will that free up some of the houses even at the lower end of the market? You're shaking your head no, Scott.
No, look, as far as the market and transaction volume, 75. I just don't see it, because I think maybe JB, some, it was mentioned that our buyer pool out here doesn't come out and say, well, you know, the interest rates are, they are buying with cash. They're very smart. They're wealthy people, and it's not even, 9 times out of 10, it's not even discussed.
And so let me ask then, on the seller part of the equation, how far is the interest rate going to have to fall before we start to see people who are willing to make the move and put more houses on the market, increase the inventory?
I think they're sitting on 2.75%, 3.5% mortgages, and I just,
we may
that
not get
is
there.
Absolutely happening out here. There is no doubt that people are. Have built a bunker around their interest rate and their financial situation, and they're just not putting the properties on the market. But you know, the bigger picture, I mean, what can we do? The mayor is here, Chris. These are folks who, I was in government for a while, as we spoke. Zoning has a lot to do with it. And it's like the worst thing that you can say when you're in office and you're looking at things and you're trying to find solutions, and you see a piece of property and a property comes up in front of the town board or the village board, and you look at it and you say, that would be interesting to put, you know, some affordable housing there. In the back of your mind, you're saying, I'm going to be barbecued on this because people don't want it. They just sit there and they, you know, everybody says, yeah, but, you know, and there is a perception out there that affordable housing is, you know, wrecks real estate values, takes away equity. But I do think that the time is now to collect the brains in the community and start to look at what are our options and maybe do an overall evaluation. And the townships do a great job evaluating properties to preserve. I don't know if everybody's been to like the Community Preservation Fund offices for the respective towns, East Hampton and Southampton, giant maps and the color coded. It's almost like targets. You know, and you go out to East Hampton, what's that one? Oh, yeah, we have that targeted. Oh, yeah, we have that one. It's all for preservation. I don't know if we can pull it off politically to look at these properties and say, hey, that's a good property. Only when a developer or somebody comes in, puts an application in front of the board, then they impose and they say, oh, by the way, we're going to require 4 affordable housing units. We're going to require a certain percentage within your density measures, or, you know, that's the only time. And I think now is I think we're losing inventory from that perspective because, again, the lower end, the tide in the harbor is so high that we're not going into, you know, everybody used to say, oh, we'll go to Hampton Bays or go to North Sea and go look at, you know, these properties, and this little tiny house over in North Sea just traded for $900,000. It's 680 square feet. I don't know if Hal's laughing because I think you know the property.
That's about the size of this room, isn't it? Maybe not even.
$900,000. And how many local families are out there that have jobs that can sustain taking on that at a 6%, 7% interest rate? It doesn't happen.
That is the bottom of the market right now, right?
That's the bottom of the market. You pull up and you go, hey, little Johnny, here's your hope. You know, come on. I mean, it's like, it's not happening. It's not happening.
JB.
I think for homeowners to feel motivated to lease their homes, the interest rates would have to come down to around 4.
Okay.
I don't think it will ever happen.
Yeah, that's going to be a tall order, probably.
Thinking outside the box, the 70-acre parcel, the Tinto property in Waynescott, so he has the right to subdivide in 51-acre parcels. So I'm an advisor to the town board of Sag Harbor in East Hampton for the last 24 years, so I said, I have an idea. Why don't we make an exception, create a special tax district here? We allow them to subdivide 51-acre parcels. We build 3-story structures, which is not allowed by law in East Hampton. It's 2, depending on topography, 2.5 stories. We have affordable apartments on second and third floor and commercial industrial on main level. Nobody wants to do it because the Friends of Georgica, they have a lot of money. They came out and said, no way, because it's going to affect Georgica Pond. So if we are to survive, we have to pay attention to the environment. If we do not pay attention, there's no point of it. There is a solution. We can increase the number of accessory buildings on single-family homes. And we have to relax the legislation where, let's say, I have, like Adam, 5 homes. Miller, just kidding. So I don't reside in my 5 homes. But I can have accessory apartments in my other 4 homes, and I can rent them. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 bedrooms, 1 apartment, $3,000. The town picks a number that works for the homeowner and for the tenants. That's a way of doing it. But we need to relax legislation in terms of homeowner occupancy.
Got it. I failed to mention Enzo Morabito has joined us, finally. So I want to give you a chance to speak to the issue. I do want to move on for a minute here because we are talking a lot about affordable housing because that's the nature of these conversations. But Enzo, talk a little bit about the current situation. And we talked earlier about inventory being low and that being an issue and the impact of interest rates. Give us sort of an overview.
Well,
and if you could pull your mic in so people can hear you.
I'm sorry.
I think it was very interesting in the fourth quarter after last year. Last year was kind of like being in zombie land. You know, we held our own, but just the past quarter, you picked up that something was in the movement, and you saw it in the upper pricing, over 5 million, that for the last quarter constituted about 20% hike in sales over $5 million, which is very unusual. Also on the high end, the first time that you're actually seeing, I'm trying not to take high-end properties. And I know it sounds weird, but high-end properties typically take about 2 years to sell over $10 million. We did the research on it, and it just sits there. And from the time that it's listed until the time that it's sold, a typical discount is it's about a quarter, 25%. So that you do have things going on. But I see a resurgent, barring any unforeseen whack thing that can happen. You know, I mean, right now my main concern is that I'm looking at finances, is commercial properties, the office buildings. And you can see it. It's starting to happen down in Florida. You know, Florida, it used to be, you look at New York, whatever happens in New York comes here. Once they go down, then we go down. But Florida's pretty, pretty strong market. But when you're looking at people there, there's an optimism that if things just lay out right, are we going to, you know, hit it out of the ballpark? No, I think the home runs, I think the grand slams are over. I think everybody's going for singles, doubles, you know, triples. I don't think you get triples that many. At least I don't. You have to work for it.
Small ball.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. So all in all, I have pretty strong team west of the canal. So when people talk, if I may, you know, tail on to this, with affordable housing, for a while there was a wave going that way because it was affordable. You know, when you look at Hampton Bays, East Quag, and you're seeing these things starting to go through the roof, a mass migration is happening from those people that are selling. They're moving to Riverhead. There's the condo units, the people who don't want to leave the area, or maybe work within the area. You can still go north in Riverhead, and you can pick up a condo of $400,000 to $600,000. You know, 2-3 bedrooms. So I think that might be our affordable housing. Because short of that, I've been hearing this, Scott, we've been around a long time. Every year you hear this, we need affordable housing. And then, well, where is it? And I agree with you that the only way that you're going to get around, I don't think it's ever going to change. I think the only way we're going to get around is to get accessory buildings, accessory apartments, somehow to get our kids in there. My son is at South Point in college, and I'm trying to figure out, well, where's he going to live? I'm looking in Brookhaven, you know, Brookhaven, the Hamlet. I'm actually going there to buy him a house for the future, because I go, he's not going to be able to afford this. So there's optimism and there's pessimism that go hand in hand here. But I think we're on a good wave, barring any madness that might happen. You know?
Well, we certainly don't expect any madness in 2024. Yeah. Adam?
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to say thank you, Mayor, for your service, and Chris, for yours as well. And to hit on something Scott mentioned, I do sit on the board in East Hampton, the Community Housing Association Board, which is a liaison to the trustees. And we're tasked with spending this 0.5% that was passed last year. It's definitely not enough. Not even close. So you have 2% going to preserve land. And I use the example of the Star Room. Many of you know the Star Room, which will sit there forever and no one will ever use this park, in my opinion. You have a piece of land there that's on the highway
that really wouldn't have affected anyone if that was developed, and now it's sterilized for the rest of time. In my opinion, a really horribly missed opportunity for affordable housing. The overwhelming consensus, what we need is rental housing, large rental housing. Forget the single-family dwellings, because no one can afford the down payments. You need to get rental housing, and that's what's come from our committee. Furthermore, I have a wealth of clients, let's say, who have an interest in helping this community. So we're discussing bringing in some of those clients who perhaps would consider a lesser return on their investment for helping the community where they actually do love and have a second home, and realize that the people that make this community work are the people behind in the kitchen over there, or that are serving us. Because without that, we don't have a community. Lastly, I think something that the former mayor said is very important for the real estate brokers and the community in here, is to bring to us or to the town board properties that you see, instead of them going to market. We're a board that now evaluates these properties and then sort of rates them on a scale of 1 to 10 and says to the town board, this is in East Hampton, which is where I live, this is a 10, this is a 1. And the things we evaluate on is based on, like I used the old star room as an example, close to a sewer system, not going to affect any neighbors. What's the density on the highway, and how legislation can help affect this to be a more vibrant community. And to me, when I drive by that every day on my way home from Bridgehampton to East Hampton, I'm like, oh.
It would have been a 10.
What a miss. That's a 10. A 12.
So can I suggest, Adam, that it's still a step forward that your committee now exists, and that that properties can be referred to it to be considered for this use? That wasn't here a couple of years ago.
It wasn't here last year.
Mm-hmm.
But without the help of private funding, we're not going to get anywhere.
Still not enough money.
No. And you have 2% going to preservation. You have 0.5% going to housing. The preservation, in my opinion, we should be done with. Like, this place is probably 40 to 45% preserved forever. And I moved out here for that reason, because it's gorgeous. But I feel like the law's been in place since 1998. I moved out here, and I was a 9/11 transplant, as Dana said. And enough is enough with the preservation, in my opinion, because you can only preserve so much until you lose your community. So going back to some of the points you made, the beauty of this area is so obvious, and there's so much land that we've protected over 20 years. I'd like to see a shift more. I wish 2% was used for affordable housing and 0.5% was for, because to see land like that just becomes sterile, and it breaks my heart, it really does. And my kids are 7 and 10, it doesn't affect me all that much yet, but Brian, my partner, is a local, born and raised, was fortunate enough to find a house that he could afford. I don't know, how long was that?
2019,
pre-COVID. But here's a law partner who went to law school at night, who was 1 year out of being priced out of this market. Mm-hmm. Maybe 6 months.
It's a little microcosm of something that's happening every day, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a professional who did 3 years of school, very expensive, all this stuff, and forget, non-professional. So that's not to suggest that lawyers make a lot of money or a little money, whatever. It's all relative. But my point being that I think that the real estate community, I think that was a wonderful, whoever brought that up, is a really great idea, that if you see these listings, these pocket listings, bring them. I mean, you can bring them to me privately. I assure you, I'll sign something. I'm not going to go sell it. I'll go right to the board with these properties and bring it up as an example for us. But I keep going back to like that star room or other things that we preserve. There are certain things that I realize have to be preserved, but on a highway, to make it a park, I mean, I don't know. But that to me is a great example of a poor legislative decision.
Thanks, Adam.
Yeah.
Anybody have anything to say?
Yeah, the stock room or the old swamp property, neighbors got together and raised the money to purchase that. The late Rick Del Mastro's family, the chair of the Wayne Scott Advisory Committee for many years, served on that committee for 35 years. So his family donated a lot of money. So it was not that the money came from CPF. So a bulk of the money to purchase that property came. Yeah. Well, there is a green there in honor of Ricky, so that's why it's there. But the Sears property, we thought of building affordable housing there in East Hampton. Sure. All those folks on Furtherland came out with their attorneys. The deal is dead. Yeah. St. Michael offered us. I was a member of subcommittee of housing in East Hampton, and they offered us, what, 12 acres, I believe. We built that structure, all those apartments there for 54, 55 and older, I think. And then we have Gansett across the street from the former Dolores Principe. So, you know, it's a balance. East Hampton is trying to do its share. We need Sag Harbor to pick up space. We need Waynescott. Montauk, we don't have large enough parcels. Southampton needs to do more. Southampton has three times the population, year-round population of East Hampton. And what do they do? Again, we have 150 or so affordable units being built in East Hampton currently, and we are looking at other possibilities. But me, as a member of the community and as a real estate agent for 30 years, March 10th, I try to do my share. Again, 20 years ago, Tom Kopka and Tom Rule, whenever something came out of the market at $300,000, $400,000, they were the first ones, and Deborah Foster would come in within a couple of hours. I would give a price. They would go to the town board. They would get the money, buy the house, sell to a local family. So we need to do more of that. Now it's difficult because we have so many buyers. The Hamptons became international. The Hamptons is not what it was when I first came here from New Jersey. I came here from Morristown, you know, but spent a summer in 1990, and I said, shoot, man, this place is beautiful. I went back to Jersey, and I said, no, I want to buy a place in the Hamptons. And I've been here now for 34 years, so nobody knew the Hamptons. Now, when you travel abroad, everybody knows Hamptons. They want to come here, so that's why the prices keep going higher and higher.
Just to be fair, I should say that Southampton Town is looking at an affordable housing project in Watermill right now. So that
enough.
Would be the first use
yeah,
of the...
Late.
Yeah,
it's late.
Yeah, well, I don't, no argument there, but there is one thing. I hope you all join me in thanking our panelists for being here today. And I want to thank everybody in the room because the real estate industry is important to what we do at the Express News Group, and you've always been very supportive, so thank you for that. I want to thank you, our partners, and to WLIW for being here today and helping us out. And thank you to everybody in the room for turning out for this event. We appreciate it. Thanks.